Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. Hit that like button, leave a positive comment, or hit subscribe to get alerted when new episodes drop. All of this will help keep the project going. Thank you for your support and enjoy the episode. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my wonderful guest today is Jean Lin, who is the CEO of Your Financial Personality, a keynote speaker, certified financial planner, and recent author, which we will all get to shortly. So welcome, Jean.
Thanks, Lauren. I'm so happy to talk to you today.
I am so excited for this conversation for a multitude of reasons. Number one, I know a little bit about your background and your story, so I'm excited, you know, for you to share that with the audience. And I just love what you're doing with your business and your company and just the topic of financial literacy and value and education, I think is just so important. So let's jump right into it. Why don't we kick off if you want to give maybe a 30-second, one-minute overview about your business, your financial personality.
Absolutely. If you think about the financial industry, it is all about numbers. But the decisions that we make around our personal finance is anything but numbers. It often involves our own unique attitudes and beliefs about money. And as someone that spent my entire career in financial services, to me, that's a big gap, is helping people understand their relationship with money. So that's why I created a framework to help people understand their financial personality so they can make more intentional decisions going forward. Money isn't just about numbers. There's a lot of emotions involved in that. And I'm here to help close that gap.
I love it. I love it. We're going to come back to how you got to starting your business, but let's jump in our time machine and go back to when Jean was a little girl. Give a little bit of your background, like where are you from, only child, how'd you grow up, what did you want to be when you were a kid, you know, when you grew up?
I love this. And this is something that I spent a lot of time in my book. When I look at my personal story, I'm the youngest of five children, grew up in Kansas City, Missouri. I am a Kansas City Chiefs fan. So that's been a great last few years.
you and Taylor Swift, huh?
That's right. That's right. That was a surprise. Growing up in Kansas City, I think is really interesting because I grew up and became a spender in a family full of savers. And looking back on it, when I reflect on my youth, money seemed to me to be the ever-present elephant in the room, guiding almost every decision our family made with an attitude towards scarcity. And it really didn't make sense to me. First of all, we never talked about money, so I didn't understand the reason why my parents made the decisions they did. But secondarily, it felt like we had a comfortable house. My dad had a good job, so I didn't understand all of this anxiety and stress that seemed to follow every money decision we made. And there's this one moment, you know, I'm a preteen. I wanted Guess jeans. And Lauren, do you remember Guess jeans? I mean, this was big back in the day. I so desperately wanted a pair of Guess jeans. But I heard those dreadful words, those dreadful four words that seemed to follow me throughout my childhood. And it was, we can't afford it. Heard that over and over again. And I started to equate my mind that we can't afford it is you're not worth it. And so when I grew up, I said, I am going to buy myself. When I have my own money, I'm going to buy myself those Guess jeans and whatever I want. And so I equated spending with, you know, validating my own personal self-worth. So you were asking me about what I wanted to be when I wanted to grow up. I actually wanted to go into politics, and I was certain about exactly what I wanted to do when I grew up. And so right before I graduated college, I did an internship and I realized politics wasn't what I thought it was. And so I found myself, at 21 going, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. So I just fell into a job in financial services. And I had a lot of shame in my early 20s because I was learning all the ways that you should be managing money, all that numbers, all that analytical stuff. But my emotions had the best of me. And I found myself in credit card debt in my early 20s, doing exactly the opposite of what I knew I should do. And so I came to a So I came to a reckoning and I started to really think about my experiences with money. And that's really the seed behind your financial personality is when I recognized that I was spending as, an affirmation of my self-worth, I was actually able to shift and change and say, well, what do I really want out of life? And I started to establish goals and became a more intentional spender going forward, if that makes sense. So that's my personal history is really enmeshed in who I am and what I do today.
And do you remember the moment, because I can imagine or would imagine that a lot of people can relate to a lot of what you just said there. What was the moment, or do you remember the moment, or was there one that it clicked, like, just your view on money, or when you kind of came to that like reckoning with yourself of, okay, I'm viewing this through the wrong lens. I need to shift it through a different lens in order to serve, myself and what I want to get out of this.
Yeah, I do. So George Kinder is one of the founders of financial planning. So he was a financial planner. He lives in Hawaii. He wrote this book called The Seven Stages of Money Maturity. And I actually went to a seminar of his and he took us through that money journey. He asked everyone in the room, and they were all financial planners, what was our earliest memory of money? And he started to connect that to our financial decisions that we were making. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this makes a lot of sense. And so he's definitely one of my mentors. And to me, what I did is I took that work and I simplified and made this framework so people can easily identify what their personality is. And once you understand it, become aware of it, because nobody really thinks about their earliest money memory. No one had ever asked me that question before he did. But once I went through that process, that really helped me change my relationship with money.
And what were you like when you were a kid? Like some of your personality traits, were you, did you go against the grain? Were you a curious kid, like playing outside all the time, playing inside? Like how would you describe yourself as a kid?
Oh my God. I was half nerd, half creative. So I read a lot. I'm a big reader. So I spent a lot of time reading books, but I also spent a lot of time, exploring outside, hanging out, and creativity has always been something that's something I really enjoy. Is doing things differently, exploring new ideas, different ideas.
So I'm gonna skip forward to I'm gonna ask one more question, then skip forward to maybe when you got out of school, but. What from your childhood do you remember? Do you still carry with you to this day? Called personality traits or lessons learned. Like, what's something that your mom or your dad taught you, or a family member, or both your parents that you remember learning from your childhood that still holds true with you today in a positive way? Something you carried with you.
Yeah. So I mentioned that I wanted to go into politics. And when I was 7 years old, I used to tell my mom I wanted to be president of the United States. And my mom didn't say, you can't do that because you're a girl, or the myriad of other reasons why it would be impractical. She's like, you can do whatever you want. And so I think that has always carried with me. And I so appreciate my parents never like pushing down any idea, however far-fetched.
I love it. I love it. So let's go back to or forward, I guess. You get a job, you have credit card debt. How do you start? And maybe this will get into your framework a little bit, but how do you start to even dig yourself out of that and really start to set yourself on a path of good financial decision making? I'll say.
Yes. So one of the things that I really started to think about is, rather than thinking about all the things that I couldn't do. So a lot of times, the first thing that you will hear from people when they talk about credit card debt is you need to have a budget. And as a spender, budgets aren't fun, right? They don't sound really great. And what I realized is a budget is really just a series of priorities. And so I spent some time thinking, what was important to me? I knew I wanted to buy a house. And so having a financial goal, figuring out what are you saving for? What are you deciding not to spend for, can help you make those trade-offs. Do I want to buy this or do I want to put that money towards that goal? So I would say the first thing I want people to do is start to establish goals. What is something that they want to do? And that can be a small goal. It can be a big goal. There's lots of different goals you could do. But that helps you give the motivation to start then looking at, okay, let's just see how much I'm spending. And that's oftentimes an aha experience. People just look at the categories and simpler is better. You only want to have about five categories of things that you're spending money on. And then you start to see, well, you know what? That to me, category isn't as, I don't want to spend as much as I'm spending on this. So I'm going to reallocate that, or I'm going to make some decisions to put some money towards something that's more important to me.
How do you, are those categories in your mind like the same for everyone, or do they vary, or is it the general same bucket for that apply to most people, or what were your categories?
Sure. There's a couple that are going to be, so obviously housing's one of the biggest expenses that anyone can have. And then you look at food can be a big hit, and not just groceries, but eating out. And you look at Americans eat out more and more. And then, so those are kind of some of those fixed expenses. You got to eat, you got to have some place to sleep. Typically there's going to be insurance, there's going to be a saving category. And then there may be a health and wellness category, or there may be some other ones. Usually that fifth category is going to depend on who you are and what's important to you. But there's going to be fixed expenditures and things that you can shift depending on where you are. Fixed is usually, you know, that insurance, food and housing. And one thing I'll share with you that I did, and a lot of Americans don't talk about this, is housing is one of our biggest expenses. But there's been this huge sea change in how individuals live in the last 100 years. If you looked at 100 years ago, people didn't live alone. And today, I think it's like 40% of Americans live alone, and that's your same biggest expense. You're trying to get out of debt. That's what I did in my early 20s. I got a roommate. So thinking about how can you have living situations, and maybe this isn't for the rest of your life, but that can be a big difference. Especially for young people, is how can you reduce those housing costs? Because those are going to be fixed, or not fixed, but non-discretionary, I should say.
And so take us through. So you're in your 20s. You start to, and make sure I'm getting the timeline right. You start to kind of see, okay, I want to approach this my financial well-being, I'll say, in a different way. You start to navigate that. You start to set a framework in place for yourself. Then, where do you go from and maybe we can do this all in one thing to kind of fast forward to how you started your company. Where do you go from a career progression? So you start in the financial services sector, I think I heard you say. Mm-hmm. How do you progress from there? And then how ultimately do you end up starting your own business?
Sure. Big question, but I'll give you a good answer. So when I think about the financial services industry, you know, my first few years was just learning about the industry. I grew up in a household that didn't talk about money, much less investing. And so I think the first few years, you know, I got my CFP, I'm a certified financial planner. That took a few years. So just learning, I would say, all of the nuts and bolts, all the information around how to invest, how to create a financial plan. And you know, attending the seminar with George Kinder to me was a real turning point, because before that point, there's this assumption in the financial industry that all decisions are rational and you should be able to look at your spreadsheet and just make these decisions. And he really opened my eyes and said, no, especially financial planners see this all the time. Money is an emotional topic. It really is. It's the number one source of stress for Americans. And I saw this opportunity to look beyond the numbers and explore individuals' attitudes and beliefs about money. And so still sticking within the financial services industry, I started to really explore that. And a key part of my role for many years was helping advisors better connect with their clients and grow their business by understanding the attitudes and beliefs of their future client or their clients and future prospects. So I spent a lot of time in investor research, but there was a pivotal moment where I would say I got a little bit caught up in, for lack of a better word, just the expectation that more responsibility, you know, a bigger job, more money is always better. And, you know, you and I are friends, Lauren. I think you saw me progress through this journey, mm-hmm. and I was doing something that I really loved and desired. And I was asked, hey, can you take on this huge new role? And it was something that I didn't really think through, I think. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, yeah, that sounds great. And I spent the next few years, you know, working at a job that ultimately I realized wasn't a good fit for me. It took me too far away from the things that I was really passionate about mm-hmm. in the financial services industry. And I made a pivot. I said, you know what? And I told my boss at the time, I said, you know, this isn't working for me. I think I would do our firm a better service if I had a role like this. And I talked about being creative and not being afraid to say no. I just created a role. I said, what if I did this? And I had a boss, you know, and you know, sometimes that doesn't always work. But I had a boss that was willing to listen and willing to advocate for me. And I was able to get back on the path that has continued to this day, which is really around attitudes and beliefs about money.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
You said something in there that I think is important and to focus on. It's a little off money topic, but just in general with career and maybe advice for people at different stages of their career. Number one, you said what you wanted, right? Number two, you had an advocate, you know, within your company. How important, just again, advice or guidance for our audience, how important are those two things? To be clear about what you want in your career, and then also to have an advocate or mentor within your organization that can kind of champion you? Or what's your general perspective on those things?
I think a lot of people, with being clear about what you want in your career, that's a tough thing for a lot of people, and including myself. Mm-hmm. So I said, I went from absolute certainty my whole childhood to, oh my gosh, I have no idea what I want to do.
Gene, the irony is I was a political science major and I wanted to go into political campaign fundraising. And then I did like an internship and I was like, so I was very passionate about the issues of politics. But then I was like, oh my gosh, this is way too political for me. Like it's way too much non-directness, manipulation. Anyway, so it's funny that both of our political careers ended short.
Well, I think we had the same experience. Yes. And hey, that's how you learn. But I think that's actually a really good point when you ask the question, like knowing what you want to do. We both thought we wanted to do something until we experienced it. So I do want to emphasize that. I think people can find joy and fulfillment in a lot of things, but sometimes you have to experience it. So if you're 20 years old, you don't have to feel the pressure to say, I know my career trajectory for my entire life. That's impossible to know. You know, no one knows what's going to happen. But I think exploring roles and, you know, seeing what you become really passionate about and finding a purpose, like your purpose in life is what you have, the gifts that you have to help others ultimately. And to me, that purpose can be found in a lot of different ways, but making sure you're true to that, I think is most important. And secondly, with advocates, I think advocates, mentors, an attitude of learning, not always trying to learn something new has served me well in my personal career.
What would you say is, if you could give yourself advice, your younger self advice, what would you tell yourself?
So this actually advice I think has a lot to do with what I talk about in my book. And my book is specifically directed towards women. So one thing I think is really important to acknowledge is that women and men actually have different thoughts when it comes to money and finances, and specifically around the term risk. So if you think about the term risk, and this can be applied to financial matters, but this can be applied to your career, it can be applied to everything. When men hear the word risk, they genuinely view it in a positive light. Like risk to men is I need to go out and feed my family. Risk is necessary for survival to men. But when women hear the term risk, we often perceive it in a negative light. To women, risk is something that you do that's bad, that may or may not result in a negative outcome. Risk is not wearing your seatbelt to women. Risk is not putting your children in a car seat. So when I think about my personal career, I was risk averse at the beginning. I never even thought about having my own business. That seemed too risky to me. I thought the only path was you get a corporate job, you get a nice safe job, and you save money, and maybe you can retire someday. And then maybe you can do what you really want to do. What I learned is, actually, you can find lots of ways to do things that you're passionate about, to find your purpose in corporate America, sure. But, I feel like just now, in my late 40s, I gave myself permission to start my own business, which someone in my early 20s, I never would have done that. I thought that was too risky. And I think you're a great example of that, Lauren. I've seen you, be a small business owner, have success. And it's like, guess what? This isn't just, for a certain segment of the population. Anyone can start their own business. But that was something I had taken off the table. I'd never had considered it.
You know, it's interesting. You touched on something there that I've been thinking about a lot as personal life and business life and just what the boundaries are. And I always think of them as limiting beliefs that we put on ourselves, that once you kind of break through those, it's like, wow, like, why can't I do whatever the thing is, right? And for some people, you know, again, depending on where you are in your life or what your ambitions are or what, what you value, those can be different things. But you said a couple of things there, limiting beliefs. I think that we need to be conscious of not putting them on ourselves. I mean, everybody has them naturally, right? DNA, how you're raised, but reevaluating those. And then also you said it, and I say this all the time, giving yourself permission to do the thing, right? Like you don't need other people's permission to do the thing when you're talking about your life. I think it was Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx. I hope I'm giving her the right credit and somebody else didn't say it, but it was like, you know, you got to be the director in your life is your movie. You got to be the director of your own movie, right? Like not letting other people dictate the direction and what brings you joy and you happiness. So I think your story and experience epitomizes that. And it's not about, discovering it in your late 40s versus your 20s. It's like, you got it. You know, some people don't get it, you know, ever. So hopefully your story sharing with them, with whatever their ambitions or goals are, it'll click. So let's talk a little bit because we've talked about it and I happen to have a copy right here. I love the outfit, by the way, Jean. I love the outfit. So this is the book, everyone. In full disclosure, I've not yet read it, but it is, I just got it 2 days ago, but I'm definitely going to read it. Breaking the Money Taboo, Helping Women Get Comfortable with an Uncomfortable Topic. First, let's talk about where can people pick up a copy of this? What's the best way to get it?
Amazon. So you can go to Amazon. That's the easiest way to get it.
That's how I got it. So it worked out. So let's talk about the book without giving too much away, because obviously we want people to go pick up their copies and read it. But what would you say, like if you were going to maybe highlight 1, 2, 3 key things out of this that we haven't maybe already talked about or reiterate them, what would those be?
Sure. When I think about money as a topic for women, I think it's a topic that women don't talk about enough, if at all. So women talk about a lot of things, but money is usually not one of them. And as a certified financial planner, women come up to me all the time when they find out what I do. I usually hear from them I should know more about that, or I need to meet with my financial advisor. There's definitely a should And then they usually change the subject. They don't want to keep talking about money with me. It's a taboo topic. Women don't talk about money. And it's understandable. So I go through the history of why women don't want to talk about money. But the second thing that I think is important to address is shame. That should, I think, oftentimes comes from a place of shame. It's really shameful for me, or it was shameful for me to say that I had credit card debt. I talk about my personal story, but I think it's so important because everyone makes money mistakes. They just don't talk about them. Mm-hmm. And when we think about women, especially, women oftentimes think, I need to have all my information. I don't want to make a bad decision. There's that risk aversion. And so they tend to avoid talking about money, making money decisions. But oftentimes avoiding those money decisions can be the worst mistake you can make. So I talk about my money journey and the fact that despite the fact that I have made plenty of money mistakes, you know, I'm still financially independent. There is a path forward for all women. And the last thing I would say about women specifically is, and I think you feel this too, right? It's so important for women to help empower other women. And I can't think of a more empowering thing than financial independence for women. If you are financially independent, you don't have to worry about who you work for. You don't have to worry about where you live, who you spend your time with, how you're going to feed your family. Financial independence solves a lot of problems for women. But to get there, first we got to talk about it. And then we have to not be ashamed that maybe we haven't talked about in the past. It's really understandable. There's lots of good reasons. And then the last thing I'll share, last point, I know you want, I'd love to hear your reactions. Yeah. The last thing is I talk about the financial personality model. Why have you made the mistakes or the money decisions you made in the past? It's probably be associated with your financial personality. There's four different financial personalities. You know, it's really easy to identify who you are. And I say, here's the things that you should be thinking about going forward. Here's ways that you can make more intentional money decisions going forward based on your money personality. And oh, by the way, your partner or someone in your life likely has a different money personality than you. That's a source of a lot of conflicts. And once you start to understand who they are, you can approach those money conversations a little bit differently.
So give another, I'm trying not to give too much away, but I'm literally like jumping out of my skin because this entire topic I just love. What are the four financial personalities?
Sure. I think the best way to go about this is to talk about the two different dynamics when it comes to money and investing. So the first one is around your attitudes around money. So are you someone that has an abundance mindset? So that's me. I have an abundance mindset. Life's going to get better. there's always going to be more money. Oftentimes these folks are more on the spender side, but there's a lot of entrepreneurs on this side. You know, an abundance mindset to me is personified by baby boomers. You know, things have typically gone better for them financially. They've had investments in the stock market have paid off, in the housing market that has paid off. I think one song that personifies an abundance mindset is Fleetwood Mac, and this was Bill Clinton's campaign song. It's Don't Stop, and the refrain goes, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Baby boomers are like, yeah, tomorrow's going to be better.
I love Fleetwood Mac.
and this is not political in any way, but that made sense for baby boomers. But if you sing that song to millennials today, don't stop thinking about tomorrow, they're thinking, well, that's The Walking Dead is what tomorrow is. That's climate change. I don't know what's going to happen with tomorrow. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And that is the other side of the equation, which is a scarcity mindset. Individuals with a scarcity mindset are typically more vigilant around their finances. They're uncertain about the future. I think about my Aunt Gladys and Aunt Nadine. These are my two great aunts. They grew up in the Great Depression. They were great savers. They never threw away anything. Think about those rubber bands that were around your newspaper when you had a newspaper. You know, they saved everything. Mm-hmm. Because they always wanted to be prepared because they went through a huge crisis. You know, you think about individuals in the Great Depression, 25% of Americans were unemployed. People would pick up and move to a different part of the country because they couldn't find work, they couldn't feed their family. Like and this goes back to the fact that our early childhood experiences really shape our money personality. Millennials have gone through that same thing. You think about 9/11, you know, two decades long wars, the financial crisis. They haven't seen the benefits that baby boomers have seen when it comes to investing. And oftentimes they have that more scarcity mindset. They're great savers, but they're a little bit hesitant to invest. They're a little bit more distrustful of what's going to happen in the future. So that's the first. And these kind of go on a continuum. So you think about it on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is an extreme scarcity mindset. 10 is an extreme abundance. You may feel, you know, fall somewhere in the middle. So that's one side. The mm-hmm. second side is how you approach your finances. So some people are avoidant of money and finances. They don't like talking about it. It's the last thing on their mind. It stresses them out. On the other side of the equation, you have individuals that enjoy money and finance. I'm curious to hear what you say about this, but typically the person that enjoys money and investing has a lot of spreadsheets. You know who you are if you're listening. That's a sign. That's a tell. And so you put those two dynamics together and you get four money personalities. So if you're someone that is on that scarcity mindset and you avoid the topic of money and finances, to you, money and investing is stress. It's something that's an ever present source of stress in your life. But if you're someone that has that scarcity mindset, but you enjoy money and financing, it's more like a puzzle for you to solve. Money's a puzzle for you to solve. So those are the two folks on the scarcity mindset, two personalities on the scarcity mindset. On the other side of the equation, if you look at individuals that have the abundance mindset, that enjoy their finances, so your abundance mindset and enjoying money is actually a sign of success for you. So you think about the billionaires, you think about, you know, Elon, you think about the folks that have mega yachts. They will spend money as a sign of how successful they are. So that's a group. And then the last group, people that are on the abundance mindset, but they tend to avoid money and investing. To them, money is an obligation. They know it's important, but it's kind of like going to the dentist. It's the last thing that they want to do. So I know that's a lot of information to one quick question, but that's the four money personalities.
I love it. Well, it's funny when I'm like, as you're going through these, I'm just, you know, naturally I'm like, my brain's sitting here, like going a million different miles, a million different directions. But it's funny, you know, I too, and again, throwing this out there in an effort to try to help or relate to the audience even more, I too graduated college with probably $20,000 worth of credit card debt, which felt like a lot. And I just remember and grew up very modest means, right? Like, you know, we wonderful childhood, amazing, would not change anything about it. But we were typically the family of our group of friends that didn't have the thing, but it never even crossed my mind. It was just, okay, we don't, you know, you don't get a car when you turn 16. Like you have to go, you know, you work at 14 and then you save money and then you go buy a car. And it never mattered, right? That just was the circumstance. But I remember so in college, I played basketball in college and worked in college and ended up still needing to spend money to just do things, you know, with my friends or whatever.
Right.
And I remember just graduating with credit card debt and just thinking and not really understanding it. I was definitely the person that was like signing up for the free t-shirt. And then all of a sudden it was an 18% credit card rate. Like I didn't get it. But I remember after understanding it in my early 20s being like, I am never going to do that. This feeling of feeling controlled by money, I am never going to have this feeling again. And from there, it was almost like, it's not about how much you make for me personally. It's about how I choose to spend it and living within means, because the stress of finances is something that I don't like experiencing, and I don't need the things or want the things. I tremendously believe in the abundance mindset in everything, in money, in love, in life, like in everything. But it's interesting as you were sitting there talking and going through that. And then I think about my mom, who I adore and I'm super close with. Like, she gets stressed. Like, we can't even play Monopoly as a family because she gets very stressed out about it. So it's just interesting, like, to your point, and really, I think a lot of what you probably talk about in the book is just the circumstances of what have shaped people in their lives have a view on money. But then fast forward, let's talk about the financial independence piece. Can anybody be financially independent? Any generation, any amount of income? Like, how do you view that? And what would you say to the people, you know, out there, you know, some of the younger millennials or that generation that, you know, to your comment earlier, haven't necessarily, don't maybe feel as optimistic in certain ways about their financial futures?
Sure. And thanks for sharing. It sounds like your mom is in that stress personality where a lot of women are. And it's hard to see. And I think a lot of millennials are in that stress mindset as well. It can be really difficult to be positive about things when they've had so many negative experiences. One of the things when I think about financial independence, you know, there's good news and bad news, is that, you know, financial independence is kind of a simple equation. And you alluded to this in your response. It's just spending less than you make, right? It's spending less than what cash flow is coming in. And ultimately, you know, saving and building, you know, building a cushion over time that can help you for unexpected expenses. The bad news is that financial independence takes time. It's not something that you can do overnight. And my observation is there's a lot of time and attention paid in the financial industry of how to make money quickly, how to make money quickly. But when I look at my financial mentors, most of them are pretty boring. And the biggest thing they do is they pay themselves first. So I think about individuals in their 20s, and that was one thing that luckily I started to do. And you know, this is a little bit controversial, but I think you should start saving in your 20s and pay down your credit card debt. You shouldn't necessarily wait until you pay off your credit card debt, because time is the biggest way to achieve financial independence. Is the longer that you can save and invest your money, the greater chance that you have for financial independence. I actually have a process, a four-step process in my book that takes you through the process of gaining financial independence. But I think it's important also to acknowledge, Lauren, and I love your answer. And I realize I when I was talking about people in that success category, and I mentioned a lot of people in the success category will spend a lot of things, but there's a lot of people in that success category that just feel financially free. They don't necessarily need a lot of things to feel financially independent, but they have the freedom to make their own choices. They have the freedom to do what they want. And it goes back to what you were talking about earlier, which I love all the points that are coming full circle when you talked about there's limiting beliefs and not knowing what you want to do. And to me, the first step in financial independence is not, I want to retire. And that's something the financial industry drives me crazy when they talk about retirement. What is retirement? Retirement is a failed experiment, to be honest. It's less than 100 years old. Retirees have a higher levels of depression, number one fastest growing rate of divorce. Retirement without a purpose, without knowing what you want to do. Your purpose in life, to me, is using what you have to help others. And without saying, what do I want my life to look like? And I have a series of questions in the book that really help you think about how you want to spend your time. Who do you want to help? Where do you want to live? Figuring all of that out, and it's an iterative process. To me, that's how you figure out how to be financially independent. There isn't one equation that fits everyone else, because different people want different lives, right? That's a long answer to your question.
Gina, honestly, I could talk for like hours about this, because I just from a philosophical level, it's like retirement age is the age that it is because you know, I'm sure there's a reason to it, by the way, but because people said that that's the age, right? The government or the market, whatever, decided like that is the age. But to your point, like the thought of, and obviously, you know, I'm in my early 40s, so I want to be sensitive as I make this comment. I have no idea what future Lauren will feel like when she's in her 60s, right? So I'm hedging or putting an asterisk by what I say. But the idea, and my husband says this to me all the time, it's like, I like working. I get value, purpose is huge, right? And there's a difference between working just for a paycheck, and even that has purpose and value because you're building something for yourself or for your family. Like there's a lot that matters in doing that. But the idea of like retiring to me, like doesn't even enter my mind. Like my grandmother, she was born and raised in Kentucky, amazing woman. I mean, she was working, volunteering till she was like 92 years old because it kept her sharp. She liked it. She enjoyed it. So anyway, I just responding to what you're saying, this idea of working and getting financial independence for whatever the reason is, doesn't have to have an age attached to it, right? I mean, there's no reason that you can't aspire for it at any age or period of your life, right? And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think that's what you were saying.
Yeah. And I guess my point is, and I'll tell you the reason where we got to the age. So if you think about it, 62 is when you can start to take Social Security early, Social Security benefits early. When the government started the program, life expectancy was actually below 62, right? So their thought was people aren't going to live that long. And that's what I think neither the government nor the financial industry has pivoted to. And that's the fact that life expectancy has expanded. So now you'll spend a third of your life likely in this retirement phase. And if you don't, to your point, have a purpose, figure out what are some of the things that you want to do. I think that those are the problem. It's not just. So things have changed really rapidly. And I think we have to start to reimagine that. And I'll even bring up AI. I think AI is going to change the workforce even more dramatically. And Americans have had, I think, their own personal purpose tied up in work so much, it's hard for us to break apart and say, what do we want our life to look like? Mm-hmm. And rather than saving for retirement, I think we should be saving for financial independence, which at the end of the day is just the freedom to choose what you want your life to look like. And that can absolutely includes work, right? Many of us, just like me, I don't want to stop working. Maybe I don't want to work as much, but I there's things that I want to do. I don't want to just sit, in front of a TV and do nothing.
Yeah. And you just summed it up there, I think, beautifully, the giving you the option or the freedom to choose, regardless of how you want to spend your time, the option or the freedom to choose, and then doing what's right for you as an individual. Let's talk a little bit about your jumping back to your business here, your financial personality. Obviously, we have the book. I'm going to show it one more time. And again, I love that dress on there. Love that color. It looks great on you. Where else or what other, I know that you're doing some keynote speaking work. Talk a little bit about corporations, businesses, like where can people find you? Who's your audience? Who should be contacting you about speaking engagements?
Yeah, love it. Thanks so much, Lauren. So if you think about it, one of the things I'm so passionate about is sharing this financial personality model with individuals. So I spend a lot of time talking at conferences to individuals. And if you look at conferences, oftentimes, you'll have a lot of content that is focused on, you know, your subject matter, your industry, and they'll have, you know, someone else maybe talking about sleep, maybe talking about, you know, it doesn't matter. There's lots of different, like, how can you help yourself, you know, for lack of a better word. I fit that bill. And so I spend a lot of times, not just in financial industry conferences, but in conferences helping people think about money differently. And we go back to money's the number one source of stress for Americans. How can we help people reduce stress, have more ease, and start to make intentional decisions moving towards financial independence? That's what I help people do. So oftentimes I'm talking to leaders of events. So if your audience goes to events or knows of events where they're looking for speakers, feel free to reach out to me. And I have a website, yourfinancialpersonality.com, or you can go to my LinkedIn and reach out to me. I'm happy to help. The second part is with companies that have employer-sponsored retirement plans. Oftentimes they're looking for individuals to talk to their employees. And I will talk to those groups specifically as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And we'll link up your website in the show notes.
Great.
So to one more question before I get to rapid fire here. How do you, actually two more questions. First one is, what is the best part of your job?
The best part of my job is after I finish speaking at an engagement, I have somebody come up to me and they go, oh my gosh, you just described me to a T. I've never really understood all of this stuff. I always felt like I was kind of on an outside looking in, and I feel better about where I'm going, and I feel inspired to take action. So to me, I'm certainly trying to talk to everyone, but I really want to focus and connect with those people that feel alienated by the financial industry. Those folks that money is stressed to them, they've avoided it in the past. You know, my mission, my purpose is to help make investing and financial planning accessible to them.
Love it. Love it. And how do you, and you can answer this question in any way you want, obviously, how do you define success?
How do I define success? Financial independence, I think. No, I mean, I would say living the life that you want and living in an intentional life. And I don't think that's a straight line. And I think what you want your life to look like is going to change over time because your circumstances change. And COVID really did that to me, I think. I had lots of ideas and goals that I had for quote unquote retirement. Okay, I'm going to do that in 10 or 15 years. And COVID made me say to myself, what am I waiting for? let's work on doing those now. It's those limiting beliefs, right, Lauren? You're right. I have a lot of limiting beliefs that I'm working on.
if you're okay with it, let's stay on that for 1 second. What was that switch for you? Like at COVID, was that what was that? Like, what was this, the switch that happened that time period that you were like, okay, now I'm going to go do the things. And if you're comfortable sharing, if not, it's okay. What were the things that you were waiting to do?
Sure. So when I think about COVID, I think a lot of people had this similar experience. It just woke me up to say, and I'm, you know this, but you don't necessarily feel it, is like everything can be taken away in an instant. You are not guaranteed a certain period of time, even though I've looked at lots of actuarial tables that say I'm going to live till 95. And I think I was making that assumption. Why am I living my life to think that I have that much time left? I'm not guaranteed any much time left. So a big change for me is I had a house in the Virgin Islands. I was going to retire there, and now I'm there today. I decided to move. Why am I waiting? So that was a big thing. Second thing was, starting my own business. So again, I think I was waiting till everything was safe, right? Everything was perfect before I would start. And I think COVID made me say, let's start now. Don't be afraid.
Good for you.
To wait.
Good for you.
Circumstances are never going to be perfect. I think that's what I realized.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. I'm so happy for you. And I think that what you're doing is, and the content of your business is just so important. I just think financial literacy in general, and I've only lived in this country, so I can't speak about other countries, but I just think financial literacy is an under-educated topic. So is there anything else that you would like to cover that we have not yet covered?
I don't think so. I think we're good.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Go ahead.
I'll say this. So as a result of my choices, I was just thinking about this morning. So this morning, you know, before we got on this podcast, I took a hike up with my puppies, you know, saw a beautiful view. And I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have done that, you know, a couple of years ago. So I enjoying the benefits of my choices. I'm happy that I made these choices.
I remember, this might have been a year ago. I can't remember exactly timeline. I know you would, but I saw a post on your LinkedIn and it was just like a picture of, I guess, I don't know if it was outside your front door or where, but it was beautiful. It was gorgeous. And I remember seeing that and just thinking to myself, like, I smiled on the inside and was like, she did it. Like, good for her. That's awesome. Yeah. So that's beautiful.
The last thing I'll say, and I could talk forever, right, Lauren, but that was a key motivator for me. And I talk about this in the book, is I had a picture of St. John. So that was all one of my financial goals and one of my life goals was to live full time on St. John. So I had a picture in my office of St. John. I looked at it every day to remind me of all the choices I could be making. And it's like, okay, I could do this, or I could buy this, or I could spend this money, or I could be focused on the big goal. So having those reminders is important.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm curious to hear your take on this, Sheen. It's for anybody who's listening, those things are very personal and very individualized, right? It doesn't have to end up on an island, or doesn't have to end up starting your own business, right? It's just creating your financial, giving yourself really the independence to make choices. You said it very well earlier, right? I mean, that's really what we're talking about.
Correct. And I do go, I actually have a series of questions. There's probably like 20 questions in the book that really help people take them through that process. Because, you know, so often I get, how much should I be saving, or should I invest in this? And I say, those are the wrong questions. First, you got to say, what do I want my life to look like? And then you're able to create a financial plan to get you there. But saving just for saving is never going to get you there.
You know, it's funny. I keep saying one more question that I keep talking to, because again, I love this topic, but this is my last thing. Okay. This was maybe like 6 months ago even. But I've always had like an idea in my mind of like, okay, things that like I would like to have, right? And I don't mean material things, but like, you know, X amount that I want to donate to nonprofits, or financial security, you know, at whatever age, or, you know, whatever the things are, doing things for my parents, like whatever. Again, that's my list, different for other people. But I wrote them down, and they're like my North Stars. And I do this thing with myself. I call it Financial Fridays, but it's literally every Friday. It's 10, 15 minutes. And I'm just reviewing my goals. And then I'm looking across like what's happening financially, both at work and personal wise, to make sure that I'm tracking towards those things. Never causes me anxiety, never feels like I'm ahead or behind, or, you know, it's just like, okay, I'm marching towards like, you know, these things. And it's a good way for myself to just kind of stay focused on it, but never be like overwhelmed by it. So,
yeah, I love that. I think that in taking that time, you're right, it doesn't have to take hours. Sometimes people think it's this big, long, out drawn process, but, you know, 10 minutes a week can make a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we've talked about, we've talked about where people can find you. I'm going to link that up in the show notes. Like I said, I'm going to jump to our random, these are unrelated to anything that we've talked about, rapid fire questions. There are no wrong answers, only your answer. So
love it.
All right. Astronaut or deep sea diver?
Oh, deep sea diver.
Hot or cold?
Hot.
East Coast, West Coast?
Well, I'm East Coast. I'm an East Coast person.
Binge a series or watch one episode a week?
Binge, 100%.
Watch a movie in a theater or at home?
Well, I don't actually have a theater where I'm currently living, so I'd say at home.
Android or Apple?
Apple.
Coffee or tea?
Can I say neither?
You can.
I like sparkling water, Fresca.
Oh, great. So you don't drink coffee or tea? No. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. I wish I yeah, that's hard for me to do. Brick, have you ever, now I'm stuck on this. Have you ever drank coffee or tea or no? You've just never
Yeah. I've had I would drink like a latte or something like that, but
here and there, but you never were like a coffee or tea person today.
Oh, no.
Good for you. I love your natural energy. All right. Last question. Actually, two more. Brick or stone?
Stone.
And beach. This is an unfair one for you. Beach or mountains?
100% beach. Caribbean preferred.
All right. Excellent. Jean, this was so wonderful. I so much enjoyed our conversation. Just everything that you're doing is fantastic. I'm really glad that we are able to talk and share with the audience. And everybody go pick up the book, Breaking the Money Taboo by Jean Lynn. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you, Lauren. You have definitely been an inspiration to me personally, and I so appreciate having this conversation with you today.
You're wonderful. Wonderful. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And again, my guest is Jean Lynn, and we will see you next time. Thank you.
Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.